826. Boy, the president has really gotten me angry today. Instead of focusing on his assault weapon ban, instead of focusing on the debt and the deficit, in which he rarely talks about any longer, he weighs in on the issue of football injuries and concussions because of the upcoming Super Bowl on Sunday, and I'll be there to report to all of you at the Superdome in New Orleans, as I am each and every year. But I want to add a new title to a title that was given to him a while back by the gal who has earned the title of blogger at the literarygulag.com. The coin phrase, first postmodern president who can't hope or help himself from commenting on sports-related issues, whether it's the NCAA playoffs in basketball, whether it was the controversy involving Sanchez or Tebow for quarterback in Ohio when he was running against Mitt Romney, and now saying, if I had a son, I probably would encourage him not to play football. Oof! On the line right now is Dr. Diana E. Sheets, research scholar, author, and the blogger at literarygulag.com. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Curtis. How are you?
Not too good. I've had better days. When my president starts telling me that my sons, I have three, might want to consider not playing football, I'm saying the president who doesn't have sons, leave it to the sons to make up their mind. They want to play football. They don't want to play football. It should be their choice.
I agree with you. I don't know why he's getting into this controversy, except for that we have the Super Bowl coming up, and it makes for headlines.
And it allows him to avoid talking about far more serious problems for our country, for boys and girls and adults of all types. Debt and deficit. He avoids it now like the plague. I notice he's increasingly getting very antsy and very angry every time it's brought up. You've critiqued the challenges that he faces in the second term. What are we looking forward in terms of this battle over the ever-rising debt and deficit?
Well, so far, he's been actually able to avoid deadlock, and that's really because he won a pretty strong victory, and the Republicans don't want to go down as the naysayers for destabilizing government. So he has a short window in which he can try to affect policy, and that would be somewhere between 3 months and 6 months. So, but I'm sure you would agree. I mean, he's going to have a lot of trouble getting some effective gun control legislation passed.
Well, there's no doubt, and I think he made a tactical decision, improper tactical decision at that time, because he felt the weight of support of the American public in the aftermath of the Connecticut shootings and Wayne LaPierre, horrible job in representing the NRA. So he figured it was a slam dunk instead of realizing my problem is not in urban America. My problem is in suburban America and rural America, where they're just not going to opt on to this.
Opt on to gun control legislation?
Exactly, and the assault weapons ban.
Yeah, I agree with you. And there's also, there was an interesting article in the New York Times about how effective New York has been at having a big police presence. But at the same time, there was an article in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee County, that they're firing all the cops, and the immediate consequences are going to be no protection, and what does the citizen do? And so these are complex issues, and you're right. Across America, particularly in rural and southern America, people are used to guns, and it's going to be much, much harder to tackle.
In fact, it was only over the weekend, Diana, that he actually broached that subject by saying, hey, I think I can understand. If you were a boy growing up in a family of gun owners, and your father and your uncles and your grandfather took you out hunting, and that's how you socialized, and that's how you culturized, it's going to be very difficult for you to give up the desire to have that gun. I understand that. It probably would have behooved the president to bring that up much, much earlier in the debate. So if you happen to be a gun owner who was a hunter, you'd feel a little more secure in the knowledge that, okay, president may not be a gun owner, may not be a hunter, but he understands our culture. He understands we're different than the culture he grew up with. He never made that distinction. He never made that differentiation, nor did Vice President Joe Biden, nor the person who has been tapped as the spokesperson for the administration, Mr. Anti-Gun Ownership, our mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah, well, I think, of course, that the Barack Obama is main constituency is a very, very different constituency, and they're an urban affluent sect that really doesn't want guns and really doesn't know the rest of the American culture. And I agree with you. He should have come forward right front and center in the very beginning and made it clear that he understands this is an emotionally derisive issue for Americans and tried to find common ground. So, but maybe this is a bit of backpedaling, and who knows what the outcome will be, although I think he's going to have a very, very tough fight in getting federal gun control legislation.
Now, speaking of Mayor Bloomberg, Dr. Diana E. Sheets, I think it almost behooves the president that he do something that Mayor Michael Bloomberg determined long ago, even before he was elected the first time, when he designated Raymond Kelly as his choice to become police commissioner. He basically delegated all responsibilities of public safety and anti-terrorist activity to the police commissioner, never questions him, never undercuts him. It's always Commissioner Kelly who speaks on public safety issues first and the mayor follows. You would think since the economy is a soft spot for the president, it's not his strength, it's not his strong point. People even who are supportive of him question his ability to create jobs, to stimulate the economy. To appoint someone in his administration who is looked upon as someone who is an expert on that field and let he or she run with the ball, this way it's almost as if we're coming at it with a new approach. Because I don't think anyone, even the supporters of Barack Obama, thinks he's got an answer to those very, very serious and number one issues on the minds of America's population.
No, I don't think so either. And all you have to do is look at where he came from, Chicago, and look at the terrible, terrible problems that have been happening in the south side of Chicago. And I really think that had he brought in someone who's knowledgeable about crime and in urban areas, as well as being able to appeal emotionally to Americans across the country, he could at least have a conversation about where Americans can be going. But to assume automatically that there's a different type of America that can't be brought into this conversation imposes boundaries. I was in New York, when you were first setting up the Guardian Angels, and I was, you know, I was in New Jersey commuting into New York, going to Columbia University, and I just remember what it was like to go on the subways and really worry whether you could safely go anywhere, and what a changed city New York has become. And I really think it would behoove the president to start looking at different strategies, including what Kelly has done, and before him, William Bratton.
As you know, though, it begins with stop and frisk, and it ends with stop and frisk. Yep. And Chicago, which just had 7 murders in one day, whereas New York actually had a 9-day hiatus from murders. Imagine, 9 days in which there wasn't one murder. And I can attribute it mostly to stop and frisk. Chicago, which does not have that policy, the mayor will not permit that, Rahm Emanuel. 7 murders in one day. I mean, that speaks volumes of how you get a situation in check.
It really does. And there was just a very interesting article in the New York Times, of all places, by John Tierney. And it pointed out that New York's policies, you know, it has the lowest crime rate of any urban city in America. And what they chose to do was put more officers on the street. And the result has been a huge savings in terms of what they're spending when people are incarcerated. And the other thing they decided to do, which is really what you've been saying, is they stop these crimes early, beginning with jumping turnstiles and graffiti, and going after hot spots where these crimes occur. And having these police people on the street that you're visually seeing is a huge deterrent. And I think other cities and communities really need to go with that route.
Oh, do appreciate that. Dr. Diana E. Sheets, author and blogger at literarygulag.com. Now, speaking of that, there are less people in prison. They would be mostly black and Hispanic. there are less victims of gun violence, both those who die and those who are severely injured. They would be mostly black and Hispanic. It is the result of stop and frisk with an increased number of police who are hired who are black and Hispanic. It's still a predominantly white police department, the NYPD, but they are diversifying el rápido. So the beneficiaries, for the most part, are blacks and Hispanics. Less of them in jail, less who are victimized, more who end up becoming police officers, and a safer community for all communities. Yet why this perception that stop and frisk is a violation of black and Latino civil rights when, in fact, lives are being saved and less men are being sent to prison as a result? You can't argue with the stats.